It's my pleasure to be able to share our research on caching with you today. This is joint work with my colleagues Trusty, Irfan, and Noyoon. And this work is primarily done at a new startup focused on commercializing our research called Cache Physics. A key motivation for our work is that caching is critically important to the performance of modern storage systems. Caches are found everywhere in hardware and software, clients and servers, storage arrays, key value stores, and elsewhere. By definition, a cache is a small, fast memory backed by larger, slower storage, so cache space is inherently scarce. This makes optimizations that can better utilize this cache space to improve performance or quality of service especially valuable. Examples include efficient cache sizing, multi-tenant partitioning, parameter tuning, and newer techniques like cliff removal. Unfortunately, we can't perform such optimizations without having good cache models, and this is a really hard problem because we need to support complex policies that exhibit nonlinear workload-dependent behavior. A key problem is the lack of any prior solution that's general and lightweight enough to be used for online optimization. I'm going to highlight this because it's sort of the immediate motivation for this work. What do we mean by cache models? Well, models are often represented as cache utility curves. A cache utility curve plots performance as a function of size, and this can be generalized to also include additional parameters. The plot on the left is an example misratio curve, or MRC for short, where the x-axis is the size of the cache and the y-axis is the misratio, that is, the number of misses divided by the total number of references. Since misses are undesirable, lower is better in an MRC. This particular MRC shows the behavior of running the ARC storage caching policy on a production disk block trace. And a few features are worth noting. First, the curve is very nonlinear. And in fact, it exhibits cliffs where the miss ratio drops precipitously for a small increase in cache size. Furthermore, although the miss ratio tends to decrease with increasing cache size, you can see there are some non-monotonic bumps where that's not always strictly true. MRC construction has been studied extensively for more than 50 years. Here I'll present a basic taxonomy that groups methods by applicability, that is the algorithms they support, as rows, and accuracy, whether the method is exact or approximate, as columns. And I'll discuss them chronologically. First is the brute force method dating back to at least the 1960s, and that's to construct a discrete MRC by running separate simulations for each and every cache size of interest. Now, this always works, but it's very expensive in both time and space. Seminal work by Mattson and his colleagues at IBM in 1970 produced a single-pass method that computes an entire MRC in one shot. But this only works for stack algorithms that exhibit an inclusion property, like LRU. Now, this was a great advance, but MRC construction is still too expensive, for example, requiring space that's linear in the number of unique references. And for many modern systems, that will require many tens of gigabytes of memory. The first algorithms running in sublinear space are approximation algorithms that appeared only very recently. CounterStacks from 2014 requires logarithmic space. Our own work on shards from 2015 was the first constant space algorithm. And the AET algorithm from last year's ATC also runs in constant space. The resurgence of interest in this area has been very exciting. But to the best of our knowledge, there are no existing methods that are both general and efficient, which is what prompted us to develop miniature simulation. The key idea behind miniature simulation, in fact, one of the key ideas of this talk, is that we can simulate a large cache by using a tiny one. And by tiny, I mean orders of magnitude smaller. So I'm going to highlight this because the rest of the talk is really about the details of how this works, convincing you that it works well, and demonstrating how to leverage it for various optimizations. Miniature simulation scales down both the reference stream and the cache size. We use hashing to randomly sample the key space. Now, depending on the type of cache, a key may be a memory address or a logical block number for disk storage, or perhaps a string is in a key value store. This type of sampling is related to our earlier work on shards and also somewhat related to sharding in distributed databases. Scaling also depends on statistical self-similarity, that is, that a randomized sample is fairly representative of the whole. As we'll see, this ends up to be a good assumption that holds well in practice. Since we're actually running an unmodified algorithm, we can model any caching algorithm, including custom behaviors. All we need to do is simply run the original algorithm and extract the usual statistics, such as counts of misses or references. Now let's look at how scaling down works in a bit more detail. Let's start with a full-size cache and its input references. We want to randomly sample the reference stream, but temporal sampling, for example, where we flip a coin for each reference, simply doesn't work. The reason is that we need to ensure that all references to the same key are always sampled, or we'll be blind to reuses that are central to caching behavior. So we instead use deterministic hashing for randomized spatial sampling. In the figure, hash values are represented visually by colors. First, let's scale down the cache by a very small factor of 2. So we want half the cache size and half the key space. For example, by only sampling keys whose low order bits of their hash is 0. And that's represented visually as yielding half of the colors of the spectrum, or rainbow. Note that by reducing both the key space and the cache size by the same factor, we maintain the same pressure on both the mini cache as the full size cache, so both should exhibit approximately the same behavior. For efficiency, we clearly want to scale down by much larger factors than 2. Here we scale down by a factor of 8 and see that we're sampling a narrower portion of the hash space where the low order 3 bits are 0 and represented visually by fewer colors. Surprisingly, we can keep doing this and keep scaling down and still get approximately the same behavior as the full cache. In practice, we typically scale down by a factor of 100 to 1,000. Now, as we just saw, we can emulate a large cache by using a tiny mini cache. We can represent this as scaling down an emulated cache size to a smaller mini size using a sampling rate R. So the mini size is simply R times the emulated size. In our previous example, we scaled down both the cache size and the reference stream by the same factor. But since we actually have 2 knobs, sampling rate and mini cache size, we can actually manipulate either or both for scaling down. In this talk, we use a fixed sampling rate, but you could alternatively bound space more tightly by using a fixed mini cache size. Note that with a fixed mini size, for example, 1,000 items, we can emulate any arbitrary cache size by simply changing the sampling rate. Let's look at a simple example. Suppose we want to emulate a cache with 1,000,000 items. Well, if we choose a fixed sampling rate of 0.5%, this implies that we need a mini size of 5,000 items. Or conversely, if we want to bound the mini size to 1,000 items, that implies we need a sampling rate of 0.1%. Now let's look at some example mini-sim results using enterprise storage traces from Microsoft Research and VMware virtual disk traces from the Cloud Physics traceset. Each plot contains MRCs for 3 sophisticated algorithms, LERS, the low inner reference recency set algorithm in red, ARC, the adaptive replacement cache in green, and OPT, also known as Belady's Min in blue. The solid curves show exact values, and the dashed ones show our approximations with 0.1% sampling. There are a few things to note here. First, the MRC shapes and sizes are quite diverse. Next, the mini-sim approximations are extremely close to the exact curves. Even with the low 0.1% sampling rate, they're nearly on top of each other. Finally, ARC and LERS exhibit significant non-monotonic behavior, and I've circled a couple of examples in red. Furthermore, neither policy consistently dominates the other. Now let's take a more quantitative look at accuracy for our large set of 137 real-world storage traces from Cloud Physics, Microsoft, and Florida International University. For each trace, we simulated 100 different cache sizes. We use mean absolute error to quantify accuracy. This is the standard metric used in the literature. It's defined as the absolute difference between the exact and approximate miss ratios, averaged over all points along the MRC. We present standard box plots for 3 algorithms, ARC, LERS, and OPT, at 2 different sampling rates, 1% in bluish-green and 0.1% in red. It's clear that error is extremely low. The average absolute miss ratio error is below 1 percentage point, nearly always for 1% sampling, and more than 75% of the time for 0.1% sampling. Now that we've looked at mini-sim accuracy, let's take a look at efficiency in both space and time. As expected, the variable costs of simulation are scaled down by the sampling rate R. We've experimentally verified that for 0.1% sampling, these variable costs are indeed 1,000 times smaller. However, there are also fixed costs to consider. The primary one is the cost of computing a hash for each reference to determine whether or not to sample it. And there is also a fixed cost for memory, like code and libraries. Considering both effects, A single mini-sim is typically about 200 times smaller and 10 times faster than full simulation on our trace set. Now, that 10x speedup value is very conservative for several reasons. Significantly, a separate hash for sampling isn't needed if one happens to already be available. And most caches and key value stores already compute their own hashes for key lookups that we can simply reuse. In this common scenario, speedup is much closer to the full 1000x. Next, the fixed costs like hashing need only be paid once for a given input stream and not for each mini-sim, so the incremental cost of running multiple mini-simulations with the same reference stream is very low. Now let's switch gears and take a look at some interesting ways to leverage mini-sims to optimize caches. Our first optimization method is dynamic cache tuning. This is effectively a search problem. We spin up multiple mini-sims with different parameter values and monitor the miss ratios that they achieve. Then we periodically apply the best parameter value from among those mini-sims to the actual cache. We conducted experiments to tune queue sizes in both LURS and 2Q, using up to 8 mini-sims to test a range of candidate parameter values. Here are some examples of LURS adaptation for 2 Microsoft traces. Each curve represents separate experiments at 100 different cache sizes. For each trace, the dashed black curve shows the ideal behavior, tracing the lower envelope of all the static parameter values for each cache size. So for every mini-sim, we basically, you know, take the MRC that it generates, superimpose them all, and take the lower envelope and say that's the best that we could do from among the set of choices that we simulated. Similarly, the dashed blue curve above shows the upper envelope, representing the worst static parameter value at each cache size. And finally, the solid red curve shows our auto-adapted values. You can see the paper for some alternative characterizations, such as the fraction of possible gain captured relative to a default parameter value. By this metric, the plot on the left, Microsoft MSR Source 2, is our best case result from among the 12 Microsoft traces, hugging the lower envelope closely. The plot on the right for MSR Proj is the worst case, deviating from the ideal for many cache sizes, yet still doing well for many others. Next, we present results for tuning the 2Q caching policy. It's the same presentation type as before. The dashed black curve is the lower envelope of the different parameter values, blue is the upper envelope, and solid red is our auto-adapted optimized value. Using the metrics we present in the paper, the plot on the left is the best among our 12 Microsoft traces, reducing miss ratios significantly for most cache sizes. The plot on the right is the worst case, despite doing well at many cache sizes. In general, we believe that future research can improve upon these results significantly, for example, by automatically disabling our optimization when it doesn't appear to be helping. Now let's look at a completely different cache optimization. Talus is a really cool technique introduced in the computer architecture community targeted at on-die processor caches. It uses interpolation to operate on the convex hull instead of the original MRC. The convex hull is shown as the dashed black curve, and the original MRC is shown in red. The convex hull, you can think of that as the shape that you would get by stretching a rubber band across the bottom of the original MRC. Now, suppose that we have a roughly 50 gigabyte cache size, represented by the blue dot on the MRC, that shows us the corresponding miss ratio. Talus says that we can do better and instead operate on the convex hull, improving performance. The way that Talus accomplishes this is by splitting the cache into 2 partitions called alpha and beta, and it controls their sizes and relative loads to emulate 2 different cache sizes. The aggregate net effect is the linear combination of both that happens to lie on the convex hull. In some sense, you can think of Talus optimization as a dual of our mini-sim modeling. Both use hash-based emulation of cache sizes and depend on statistical self-similarity. So inspired by Talus, we wanted to apply this technique to non-LRU policies like ARC and LURS. It ended up being a lot more difficult than we expected. First, we need efficient online MRCs. Well, that's easy. Miniature simulation makes efficient MRCs possible, as we just saw. But the real problem is that since MRCs vary over time, the Talus partition boundaries are going to shift dynamically. And this means that we need to resize or move elements between the 2 partitions. And we tried various partition resizing approaches. They either worked poorly or added significant complexity to the core caching logic. Some algorithms like ARC don't even tell you how you're supposed to resize the cache. Changing the partition boundaries also leaves some cache entries in the wrong partition. Overall, the key problem is that it's simply not clear how to merge or migrate state. So faced with these challenges, we developed a new transparent approach for cliff removal that we call SLIDE. SLIDE is an acronym for sharded list with internal differential eviction. We use a single unified cache without any hard partitions whatsoever. In fact, we defer all partitioning classification until eviction time. And this conveniently sidesteps the resizing, migration, and complexity issues that I just mentioned. We use a new SLIDE list abstraction, and in our implementation, we simply relink the existing cache policy code to use these SLIDE lists in place of the normal lists that they would ordinarily use, and we expose operations to update their SLIDE parameters without ever touching the original cache code. For example, ARC internally uses four LRU lists, which now become SLIDE lists. LURS, 2Q, and other algorithms also use multiple internal lists, which become SLIDE lists. Well, what is a SLIDE list? We extend a vanilla doubly linked list that's used for internal LRU and FIFO lists in algorithms like ARC, LURS, and 2Q. We add a small 8-bit hash value to each item and introduce a hash threshold that determines the current partition that each item currently belongs to. Now, importantly, items remain totally ordered, so we don't need to worry about how to merge or migrate state across partitions. The SLIDE list interposes on list operations. For example, the eviction operation removes from the tail of whichever partition happens to be currently over quota. There are also some additional extensions, and I'll refer you to the paper for the details. Let's take a look at some experiments. Like our earlier adaptation experiments, we conduct a separate experiment at each of 100 different cache sizes. For each experiment, we construct a discrete MRC by simulating cache sizes that are exponentially distributed around the actual cache size. To make this a bit more concrete, let's say that our real cache is an 8-gigabyte cache. Well, with these mini simulations, we're going to simulate cache sizes that are smaller at 1, 2, and 4 gigabytes, and larger at 16, 32, and 64 gigabytes. Note that even by using 7 mini-sims, we use very little absolute memory overhead for a real cache. In fact, in this particular case, it would be about 0.04% of the total memory consumption, so pretty negligible. Once we have these MRCs, we can now update our SLIDE settings once per epoch by constructing the convex hull and recomputing the partition targets. Here are some example results with some of the Microsoft traces that exhibit cliffs. Each curve shows, again, results from 100 separate experiments at different cache sizes. The behavior is good, but it's not perfect with some regressions. And this is because this is a totally dynamic system. We don't have the MRCs used for optimization up front. That would be cheating. They are evolving dynamically as the system is actually running. Plus, because we use only a small number of MRC points, this results in a rather crude approximation to the convex hull. But in terms of potential gain, represented by the fraction of the area between the miss ratio curve and its convex hull, SLIDE actually does pretty well at capturing a reasonable percentage of it. More than 69% for the LURS example on the left, 48% for the LRU example in the middle, and 38% for the ARC example on the right. As future work, as with parameter adaptation, we plan to extend SLIDE to disable itself when it's not winning in order to prevent or at least reduce any potential losses. Now, when the MRC is already mostly convex, there's very little opportunity for additional improvement. And you can see that with the MSR Proj trace here, which is one of the worst ones in terms of providing improvement. Over all 12 Microsoft traces and all 4 caching policies, the worst case that we observed with SLIDE was a regression of 0.14% in the miss ratio. So in summary, SLIDE offers significant benefits with MRCs that exhibit cliffs, yet it effectively does no harm with MRCs that do not exhibit cliffs. In conclusion, I hope I've convinced you that mini-simulation is an extremely effective technique. We found that it's a robust general method that's worked for pretty much every caching algorithm we've thrown at it, and we believe that it's a general-purpose technique that can be used for virtually any type of cache. We show that it's extremely accurate, producing average error averaging less than 0.01 with a tiny 0.1% sampling rate. And we've shown that we can use this technique to optimize workloads and policies automatically, for example, by tuning cache parameters dynamically, as we showed for LERS and 2Q, and by constructing MRCs that we can use to perform transparent cliff removal with our slide experiments. As future work, we plan to refine and extend our optimization techniques. There's a rich space of different ideas to explore, and also work on disabling optimizations when they're not winning, as I'd mentioned earlier. So thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Hi, Sam No, Eunice. Carl. So are there any particular types of workloads that doesn't really work well with your...
We haven't encountered any. I mean, if you wanted to, you could kind of perversely construct an adversarial trace, but where you deliberately set the keys so that they're going to all hash to some crazy values or subset of the space. But we've never observed anything like that. And in fact, if you encountered something like that, you can seed the hash function with a random number or something like that and defeat such a attack, if you want to think about it that way. I think in general, the only time we see somewhat worse accuracy is when we have a very short trace, right? And so we just don't have enough data in order to produce a good MRC. But even in those cases, as you saw, like the worst cases were like off by 3% for a very vanishingly small fraction of the traces.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Sam.
Song Jiang from UT Arlington, very nice work. So in oil simulation, basically you run the trace, a fixed string of requests into these simulations. But in a real use, the trace could be, the request string could be affected by the behavior of the replacement algorithm. You say a higher or lower miss ratio, some request or request of particular characteristics could be arrived. There are more that kind of particular request. So, there is could kind of interdependency between the cache behavior and the request from
Well, the modeling is separate from the actual cache, right? So you have the actual cache that's running online. Now, we use traces, but you use this in a real online system. Mm-hmm. So new requests are streaming in. You're actually doing real cache operations on your actual cache. And then you feed a tiny little fraction of them, like the little tiny arrow in the slide, into each of multiple mini simulations, which you then collect the miss ratios for. Now, I guess so. There's really no feedback in some sense between those two pieces, other than when we look at the mini sims, we decide which one's winning the most, and then apply that parameter value to the actual cache. Or are you talking about, am I misunderstanding the question?
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great talk.
Hello?
Yeah, you go.
Hi, Ed.
Hey. So, as you mentioned, caches could be applied anywhere, right? SRAM, DRAM, SSDs, storage. You also mentioned that there is innovation in replacement algorithms, including these Talos approaches that eliminate cliffs through the convex hull. Mm-hmm. It's not completely intuitive which algorithm applies best to which particular type of storage strategy. And now that we have all that, with your approach, there's all that additional flexibility. Do you have an intuition as to where this will have the biggest impact?
That's a great question. I mean, I'm kind of partial to like processor caches and other research that I've done as well, but you need people to build hardware for that, so I'm not holding my breath. In a software system, you can interpose easily on the I/O stream, so I think for storage I/O, there's a lot of opportunity here. The overhead's so small that you can make a lot of progress. One thing that I think is kind of exciting is that there are some algorithms like ARC and LERS that bake or try to build adaptivity into the algorithm itself. What we're saying here is that even if you have a non-adaptive algorithm, we can sort of make it adaptive by adding this layer on top of it. So I'm thinking that you'll get high impact in storage caches, high impact in key value stores. I think you would get interesting results in processor caches, but again, that requires hardware that no one's building.
So I actually had one question. Kind of following through on the description that you gave about how this can be applied online and so forth, mm-hmm. given that you can do these small simulations, like if a workload changes in a real cache, Do you think you can catch it faster?
Yes. Oh, and so that's one thing I sort of glossed over a bit in this talk. It was on some of the bullets, but I didn't speak to it. And please look at the paper. We actually use, because the workload may be evolving over time, in fact, that's what we expect, we actually use an exponentially weighted moving average for the miss ratio so that they will track the evolving miss ratio over time. And that seems to have worked out extremely well. And you can see the details in the paper.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.